You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Hello, 12.
Hello, 13.
Hello, 9.
You're listening to The Ensemblist, the only podcast that shows you Broadway from the inside out. Welcome, I'm Jackson Klein. This month, we're digging deep into the Ensemblist archives to share highlights from some of our favorite interviews from our early days. Today, we're revisiting our 2015 interview with Cynthia Onrubia. In our conversation, Cynthia chats all things A Chorus Line, from making her Broadway debut in the original production as a teenager, to the legendary record-breaking gala performance, why this ultimate Ensemblist musical is so powerful, and more. Here's our conversation.
Hello, 12. Hello, 13. Hello, 9. Goodbye, 12. Goodbye, 13. Hello.
I am Cynthia Onrubia, and I have lived in New York City, Manhattan, my entire life. Okay, I started in 1977, which was a very long time ago. I auditioned. They needed an immediate replacement for an understudy who was in the opening. And I auditioned with another girl who I knew that they liked because she had been in before. And we danced and we sang, and then we danced and we sang and sang again and sang again and danced again. And they said to me, could you step outside? And I went, okay. So a few minutes later, the girl came out. And I said, did you get it? And she said, no, you did. Now, that's not an answer that you typically hear at an audition. So I got the job, and I was filling out my insurance cards a few days before rehearsal started. And I was putting my birth date, but then I thought, maybe I should change the year. So the ink on the last digit of my birth date was getting thicker and thicker and thicker. And my mother came to me and she went, what are you doing? You're going to mess up your pension. You know, you've been equity since you were 7 years old. So I went, you're right, you're right. So the next day, I handed in my cards to the stage manager. And he said, oh, dear, we have a minor on our hands. I was 15. They didn't ask how old I was at the audition, you know, because I put on the eyelashes and the whole thing and the padded bra. So I knew I had to, like, really have my act together and prove myself. And I think I did because I wasn't fired. So I did the show for 2 years. And then I left to do the national tour of Dancin'. So I did that. Then I came back and went back into A Chorus Line for 3 months. They let a girl go do a film. So I was Connie for 3 months. And I went back out on the road. Then I came back to A Chorus Line, I think in 1984. I was doing Michael Bennett's workshop of Scandal. And he asked me, you know, do you want to go back into the show? There's an opening. I said, absolutely, because in workshops you make $250 a week. So I went back into the show, and I think I was there for another 10 months.
When you were auditioning for the show, was it the phenomenon that it is now when you were in your audition and rehearsal process, or was it just another dance show that you—
Oh, no, it was, because it was such a hit. No, after the audition, I ran out in Schubert Alley and screamed at my mother, I got it, I got it. I did. I really did. Yeah. And, you know, just being at the Schubert Theater, that was the home of A Chorus Line. And, you know, it was there for so many years. And the show never moved to another theater. That was it. I think they gave me a 3-week rehearsal period, but I went on early, of course, because people were out. So they said, can you do the opening? I said, sure. And I had known a lot of the cast people from years before doing an industrial show called The Milliken Breakfast Show. So they knew me as a Millikitty, as a child. And all of a sudden, I'm playing an adult on the same stage with them. And what happened was at the end of the opening, Robert Lapone, he says, you know, any Broadway shows? And then he looked at me, and he hadn't seen me before. And then he went, Broadway shows? And I went, touring company. It was heaven. It was just absolute heaven. Facing away from the mirror when that orchestra kicks in is a great rush. And I don't think that ever really disappears, no matter how long you do the show, because, you know, the first part is just with piano, and then you face away from the mirror, and bam, you're in it.
So what was your average sort of day during the show? You go, you do the opening, you do your homework until when, and then you run downstairs and sing.
Okay, well, first I had to go to school during the day. Okay. And then I was very disciplined a couple days. I would go to ballet class after school, and then I'd take the bus down Broadway and get off on 44th Street. So then I'd get to the theater, and even though I had had my class, you know, still had to warm up. It was still another 2.5 hours, 3 hours before the show. So I would do the opening, then change clothes, do some homework, and then the first thing that we had to sing in the booth was, I think, the Badas in Hello 12. And so then we would just hang out through the end of the monster montage. And then during Val, I'd go back up to the dressing room, do my homework until the ones, and then go back down, and then take the bus home. Either my father or my mother would pick me up. We'd go home. I'd have something to eat, go to bed, get up the next morning, go to school. But what was great in school, of course, on Wednesday matinees, I was in professional children's school, PCS. I got to leave at 12 noon to go do the matinee. And there was another girl. She was in The Wiz. I think her name was Eartha Robinson. I think I got that right. So we would take the bus down together, and she'd get off at the Broadway Theater, and then I'd continue down to 44th Street.
When you were put into the show, were you put into the show by yourself, or did you have other people joining the company?
No, it was just me. It was just me. Clive Clerk put me in the show. And then I think a week into rehearsal, Bjork Lee came in, and she had two chairs. She sat them down in the middle of the stage, and she said, okay, tell me about Maggie. So it was good. I was, you know, thinking about my backstory and my subtext. And Bjork had worked with my mother in Flower Drum Song in the late 50s, early 60s. So, you know, generations pass and everything. And I knew Bjork also from Milliken, because she used to be a Millikitty, because she was so tiny. So that's how I knew Bjork.
How is to you Chorus Line the ultimate ensemblist show? Or is it?
Well, I think it is, you know, even if the stories are dated or whatever, you know, everyone has a story. Everyone has a history. And it's like, I think in this day and age, even if one person seeing the show grabs onto, you know, grandmother, or, you know, I had my boobs done or whatever, there's something that I think every person can grab at and identify with or parallel it with something else. So I think it still does work.
Yeah.
And, of course, at the end of the show, everybody is dancing in the same costume, doing the same steps, the same way. Nobody's a soloist.
If Troy Donahue could be a movie star, then I could be a movie star. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Oh, the gala was, it was the over 3,000th performance of the show, and that's when the show became the longest running Broadway show at that time. That was one of the, I think, one and only times when everybody felt like a family, because Michael brought in everybody from every company. And for 2 weeks, we rehearsed at 890. And seeing people that you really never thought you'd see again. And then seeing people that did the show that you never knew. You know, all this, the people from the Japan company. Seeing Donna do the Cassie Zach scene was just heartbreaking, sitting in that studio. But Michael did some really wonderful, magical things. Like at the end of the opening, he doubled when the mirrors turn and then everybody's walking downstage before they lift up their pictures and resumes, and he doubled the music. So the company that had done the opening, which was the current company that was doing it on Broadway, they exited and he brought on a whole other line. And when the lights came up, and that they had their pictures and resume, their pictures in front of their faces, you looked and you, oh my God, it's the original company. And he had a ticker put up and it said original company. And, you know, of course, the audience went bananas. I was doing Cats at the time of the gala. And I remember strategically making up my kitty cat face so I wouldn't have to take off the lashes, because I had all that white makeup. So I was very strategic, because at the end of the show, Timothy Scott and I, he was playing Mistopheles, we ran down to the theater because he was playing Mark. So he was doing the Mark monologue and then I was doing the Monster Montage. And Michael had the Booth Theater was, I think it was empty at the time because there was no scenery in the wings. You could go under, through the tunnel from the Schubert Theater, and you could connect to the tunnel of the Booth. And on stage, he had all these tables and makeup mirrors and chairs set up, because there were so many of us. I mean, hundreds of us. So I remember getting dressed, sitting across from Barbara Luna. She was doing, because she was, I think, in the finale. And what else had Michael done? Oh, the Cassie dance. Donna did the scene and the song and the first part of the dance. And then the mirrors came in. And what Michael did was he turned. No, it was still in the upstage was still in the black, but he brought the mirrors in, and he made the stage go pretty dark, so there was just light enough on Donna. And as soon as the mirrors came in and she started the slow section, the mirrors flew right back out, and all of a sudden there were a sea of Cassies And it was just such a great feeling. You know, the audience just went, and the way he staged the entire Cassie dance with all of them just going across. And then Wanda Richard came in and did Heatwave by herself. And then they all started adding in for the final turn combination. It was the greatest thing. And then all in Schubert Alley, and it took up all of Schubert Alley, Michael had all of our 8x10s on these huge boards right outside in Schubert Alley. And it was like, wow, that's a lot of people. Favorite part, the opening, to perform. Favorite part to watch, the opening.
Out of the corner of your eye.
Yep. Always.
How come?
I think because it is an audition and, you know, when you're facing away from the mirror and that the whole orchestra kicks in, but you're in a confined space because everybody's dancing at the same time. But you know what it looks like to the audience. So you have to, you know, you got to kick it up. I think the tension of the opening is good and, you know, the laughs are there for Richie and Headband and all those people. Deanna dancing with her tongue out again. But it's, you know, I mean, I like pressure. I think pressure is a good thing. And I think rising up to it is even better.
And now that you have switched sides of the table, how do you look at that experience? Has having done Chorus Line for so long changed the way you run an audition?
Oh, I think so. I do. When I'm auditioning people, I've always tried, you know, I mean, I demand a lot, but I always try to make it fun. I don't yell at people. I try to make people laugh because the audition process never gets easier. I think because Chorus Line, the way it was written, you know, everybody is special, right? Cassie says, no, we're all special. Even though you're auditioning for the chorus to be in the same costume and look the same, I think everybody that did that show felt special because you were playing a part. You know, you were an individual. You just weren't, you know, the short, skinny, blonde second from the end. But yeah, even if you never met the person before, like at the gala, you share the same emotions. I think that's a lot of it. Whether it's rejection, whether it's triumph, whether it's sadness or anger. So I think it's more from the heart that you feel that connection with. Sure, a lot of, you know, people that did a Chorus Line went into real estate and became brokers. There are people that did the show that became dressers in Broadway shows. Then there are, you know, people like Donna McKechnie who's still doing it. So, and then you have other people, you know, of course there's Bjork, who keeps the show going for new faces and, you know, the new generation and the next generation. And so I think, thanks to her, Bjork has kept it going.
What does the What I Did for Love mean to you? How do you carry that with you?
Never get jaded. Never get bitter. Treasure the moment while it's there. you know, if you're fortunate enough to have a career and work and take that with you and know that, yes, you do get old. You know, you can't turn back the clock. So, I always say, guys, never get jaded and bitter, ever.
Special thanks to Cynthia Onrubia for sharing her stories with us today. The Ensemblist was produced by Mo Brady and me, Jackson Klein. There are two great ways you can help the Ensemblist right now. One is by leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. The other is by becoming a Patreon member, which you can do at patreon.com/theensemblist. Please follow us wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or at bpn.fm, the home of Broadway Podcast Network. You can also follow us on Instagram, where we share all of our latest episodes. Stay safe, and thank you for listening. Until next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.